Infection control risk assessments. Healthcare organizations plan for infection control when designing, constructing, or renovating facilities. The guidelines of the Facility Guidelines Institute, FGI guidelines, require healthcare facilities to conduct an infection control risk assessment, ICRA, which is a documented process to assess the impact that construction and renovation work will have on IPC programs and practices. Key point: not all authorities that regulate healthcare facilities use the FGI guidelines, but most refer to some version of them when establishing their codes. It is important to know which version, if any, relevant regulating authorities use. Per the FGI guidelines, the ICRA should be part of the broader facility safety risk assessment and must address construction design elements related to infection prevention in addition to the infection risk posed by the construction work itself. An ICRA should be used to ensure that residents, HCP, workers, and visitors are protected from infectious disease during construction and maintenance. The ICRA determines IPC practices required based on the type of activity being performed and the area where the activity will occur. It's a collaborative effort between IP, facilities, and the contractor. The ICRA team should include representatives from infection prevention, safety, engineering, and HCP, areas in the facility that are likely to be affected by the construction. The IP's role on the ICRA team is to assess the needs and risks of the resident, staff, and visitor populations that will be affected by the construction. Address the infection prevention needs of the residents and HCP who will occupy the space after construction. Provide evidence-based guidance on infection prevention to the project design team. Additional experts in ventilation, plumbing, specialty materials, and equipment may be consulted in order to address specific issues. Key point: because ICRAs involve multiple departments and outside contractors, it is prudent to establish policies that specify departmental responsibilities for each aspect of the ICRA. The types of work that fall under the ICRA requirement. Definitions of the terms used in the ICRA. Procedures for validating compliance with the ICRA. Any record-keeping requirements related to the ICRA process. There are 5 steps in an ICRA per ASHES, ICRA 2.0 matrix of precautions for construction, renovation, and operation. Determine type of activity. Identify resident risk groups that will be affected. Determine level of mitigation strategies needed by evaluating resident risk group against activity type. Assess potential risks to areas surrounding the project. Establish minimum IPC precautions required. The design portion of the ICRA must at least address the number, location, and types of isolation rooms, A2R, and other protective environments when the FGI guidelines or local risk assessment requires them. Special heating, air conditioning, or other ventilation needs. The number, location, and types of hand washing stations and hand sanitation dispensers when the FGI guidelines or local risk assessment requires them. The risk assessment for waterborne pathogens and measures to mitigate their risks. The selection of surface finishing and furnishing materials. Some of these requirements are expanded upon in the following discussions. Heating, ventilation, and air conditioning considerations. The FGI guidelines require the ICRA team to consider whether the anticipated resident population or procedures performed in a space will have special requirements beyond the standard healthcare facility ventilation parameters. In locations where proper pressure balance relationships are critical to infection prevention, the ICRA team may determine that visual indicators of ventilation air pressure balance are necessary for locations other than airborne infection isolation rooms, A2Rs, or protective environment, PEI rooms. Various recommendations and regulations may affect specific areas of facility design, including HVAC components, such as location of fresh air intakes in relation to exhaust outlets, combustion equipment stacks, plumbing vents, and areas in which vehicular exhaust and other fumes collect. The elevation, in relation to the ground or roof level, of outdoor air intakes and exhaust outlets. The temperature, relative humidity, and filtration levels of air delivered to specific building areas. Relationships between air changes per hour and air pressure differentials. The placement of filters and filter efficiency requirements for air handling systems. Use of ultraviolet germicidal irradiation. Commissioning, which is the process of verifying that the delivery of new construction is according to contract specifications. Policies that should be followed during construction and maintenance are discussed more elsewhere. Handwashing stations. The FGI guidelines establish the minimum number, types, and locations of hand washing stations, with the need for additional stations determined by the IGRA. Adequate and proper placement of hand washing stations is the major engineering and infection prevention method for reducing infection transmission. Hand washing station design should consider materials and installation to ensure ease and effectiveness of cleaning and disinfection. Consider currently installed station designs that are easy to use and restrict splashing when selecting designs for new installations. Design considerations with regard to hand washing stations include the following: faucets. Non-touch fittings may require extra attention to maintain pressure and temperature. Risk assessments are recommended to determine the appropriateness of electronic eye faucets in various settings. Some non-touch electric sensor faucets need to be evaluated as to what would be done in the event of a power outage. Location. Stations should be conveniently and accessibly placed but positioned so as to prevent splashing on nearby equipment and supplies. Areas beneath sinks should not be used for storage, and surfaces adjacent to fixtures should be non-porous to resist fungal growth. Soap. Built-in, refillable soap dispensers should be avoided. Washable dispensers with disposable cassettes are preferred. Drying. Sufficient space must be provided for towel dispensers and waste disposal. Ideal designs dispense towels without direct hand contact. If air dryers are used, avoid designs that will lead to possible contamination through recirculation of air. Aerators. These are not recommended, though proper sink design and regular cleaning will reduce risks posed by their use. Sink controls. Faucets may be operated by elbow, knee, or foot-operated controls or automatically through electronic or other sensor-driven controls. In general resident care areas, hand-operated fixtures for routine hand washing may use single-lever or wrist-blade devices. Electronic controls save water and offer no-touch operation. However, the inability to adjust water temperatures may lead to a higher concentration of microorganisms. Surfaces. The FGI guidelines specify the types of substrate used for laminate counters with hand washing sinks. Porcelain, stainless steel, or solid surface sink counter materials do not suffer from delaminating due to water damage. Plumbing. ANSI/ASHRAE Standard 188-2015 discusses the role of a facility water management team during construction and renovation, F5. 2 in the Annex for Healthcare Facilities. Representation from the facility's water quality management team can assist in evaluating the potential impacts of the construction on the water management plan. The ICRA and water quality management team should also discuss the procedures and schedule used for flushing and disinfecting the system when construction is completed but prior to occupancy. In addition to the FGI guidelines requirement of a risk assessment for waterborne pathogens, the ICRA team should consider how to reduce Legionella risk in healthcare facility water systems. The guidance recommends that healthcare facilities have a water management plan to control the growth of Legionella and other waterborne pathogens in plumbing systems. Design drawings should show the planned water distribution system, including design temperatures, temperature monitoring points necessary to confirm design temperatures throughout the system, sampling points, treatment points, and draining provisions. During renovation projects, the water quality management team may request routine flowing of water lines not used regularly in order to ensure that chlorine or other disinfectants in the water remain at effective concentrations for controlling bacterial and biofilm growth. Plumbing dead legs are sections of pipe with one end capped or those that are so rarely used that the water inside becomes stagnant and a risk for microbial amplification. Consider the removal of plumbing dead legs encountered or created during the planned project. When intentionally creating a plumbing dead leg for future expansion, include a valve to isolate it from the flowing main until it is connected for regular use. If existing dead leg piping cannot be removed, a valve may be installed to isolate it from the flowing main so the abandoned pipe may be left in place. Well-located isolation valves, recirculating plumbing systems, and connections for injecting chlorine or other disinfecting solutions can make it easier to manage future shutdowns for repair, renovation, or management of a pathogen outbreak. Surface finishes and furnishing material. The FGI guidelines include the selection of surface finishes and furnishing materials as an ICRA requirement during the planning phase. Ideal surfaces and materials are durable, compatible with the facility's cleaning and disinfection practices, and resistant to damage from moisture. Surfaces and materials in resident care areas in particular need to be impermeable to body fluids. The guidelines require that all walls and healthcare facilities be washable and that those near plumbing fixtures be scrubbable and resistant to water damage. Vinyl wall coverings are discouraged because they trap moisture in the wall, creating the potential for fungal growth, especially on exterior walls or where plumbing leaks are likely. The guidelines also provide specific floor design requirements for some types of healthcare spaces. Recommendations for the type of floor surface to facilitate the safe use of resident handling and movement equipment is a part of the resident handling and movement assessment. Key point: carpet may be the preferred flooring surface for lobbies and other high traffic locations because of its sound deadening properties and ability to trap dust. If carpet is used as flooring, it must have an impermeable backing and welded seams to prevent any spilled liquids from reaching the subfloor below the carpet. Carpet is not appropriate in areas like laboratories, EVS, or nutrition, where spills and soiling are likely, nor is it appropriate in any location where exposure to blood or body fluids is likely. Risk mitigation during construction and maintenance. FGI guidelines require that an ICRA include written infection control risk mitigation recommendation, ICRAIR, plans prepared by the ICRA team. These written plans describe the work process and equipment requirements for managing potential infection risks and, at a minimum, should address resident locations relative to construction and any need for resident relocation. Resident locations include areas where work takes place, adjacent areas, and areas above and below in order to plan mitigation activities if needed. Supply storage areas, containment barriers, and other ICRMRs. Construction phases and their impact on plumbing and ventilation systems. Effects of the construction on traffic flow, access to exits, and operation of life safety systems. Any training required for staff, construction workers, residents, or visitors. Directions on lavatory and eating facilities that are available for construction workers' use. Requirements that new materials being installed be clean and free from water damage. How the project will be monitored to validate the ICRMRs and written procedures to stop work when necessary. Ideally, the healthcare facility will have a policy that describes how the IP works with the construction team to establish and validate ICRMRs. A common model is for the IP to work with other stakeholders in establishing policies and procedures and then to conduct periodic audits to validate compliance with the agreed-upon policies and procedures. An infection control construction permit, posted at the job site and following the ICRA in detail, allows the IP to monitor infection control practices and ensure that proper precautions are being taken. The permit example in Exhibit 6-6 shows the construction information, type of activity, risk groups, class, and recommendations during construction, as well as who authorizes the work and who signs the permit. Exhibit 6-6. Infection Control Construction Permit. Key point: it is not the IP's job to tell a contractor how to do their work. The IP's job is to verify that work is conducted in a manner that adequately controls the risk of potential infections and complies with the ICRMRs. The IP should work with and through the facility's project manager. Telling the contractor how to do their work may result in problems with project schedules, costs, and liability. Conducting periodic interdisciplinary rounds of the construction sites with the project manager and safety, security, and contractor representatives is a good way for the IP to validate compliance with the ICRMRs and to ensure that any problems that may be found are corrected. Posting the IPC requirements at the site can help to maintain and monitor compliance. Infection risks due to construction are primarily mold spores carried by air movement and water pathogens in plumbing systems containing stagnant water or disrupted biofilms. Additionally, residents may be disrupted due to noise, vibrations, odors, and other issues. This is particularly true when residents cannot be relocated during construction. Flooding may also occur and cause damage or other issues due to mold. Barrier systems. Barrier systems may be used to contain dust generated during construction along with any potentially infectious microorganisms. They may be constructed of flame-retardant plastic sheeting, rigid plastic panels, or drywall board. In addition to physical containment barriers, exhausting air from the contained construction space can create negative pressure in the contained space relative to adjacent occupied spaces. This results in airflow from clean adjacent spaces into the contained workspace and then out the exhaust. The exhaust may be to the outdoors or directed back into the building after it passes through a HEPA filter. Key point: when designing the construction containment, it is important to consider the building's life safety equipment and requirements. Annunciators for fire alarms, alarm pull stations, and sprinkler heads may need to be relocated if the containment will cover or otherwise interfere with their operation. Ensure that sufficient width remains in corridors, after containment construction, for resident transport as well as to meet code requirements for emergency egress. Ventilation systems and pressure. Ventilation management and risk mitigation is key to infection prevention and control during construction. To prevent contamination of other areas in the same ventilation zone during construction work and to prevent the ventilation from interfering with establishing negative pressure, seal air supply and return grills. Ensure that active return air ducts do not leak or are wrapped in plastic sheeting. Cover exhaust grills with filtering material and connect to exterior fans. Turn off and seal exhaust systems with fans pushing air out. Verify the proper air pressure balances in adjacent areas after containment is established. Exhaust air from contained workspaces within the zone relative to adjacent spaces. Pull air out of contained work zones with a fan when exhaust air is directed outdoors and away from pedestrian traffic. Use HEPA-filtered air moving devices, negative air machines, for exhaust air directed back into the building or outdoors near an air intake or pedestrian traffic. Properly install HEPA filters in negative air machines and check for damage. Use airborne particle counting over visual inspection to locate small gaps or tears. Check pre-filters for adequate airflow through negative air machines, especially during demolition and construction phases involving sanding. Digitally or manually measure and log the negative air pressure differential between contained and adjacent spaces. For high-risk or sensitive locations, use pressure monitoring devices that can sound alarms and send phone or text messages when the negative pressure is failing. The FGI guidelines call for the contained construction space in high-risk areas to have a minimum of 0.03 inches of negative water pressure relative to the adjacent spaces in the building, as well as a visual display of the pressure differential. There is no established amount of negative pressure required for other locations. Without enough negative pressure, the effectiveness of controlling emissions from the containment is reduced, but too much negative pressure can pull down containment barriers, especially those built with plastic sheeting. Exhausting air outdoors or to a different ventilation zone can affect the ventilation balance of the occupied spaces adjacent to the contained work zone. When designing the negative pressure ventilation for a contained work zone, the ICRA team must verify that adjacent ventilation systems will not be adversely affected. Key point, for smaller jobs and work above ceilings, portable containment units, which incorporate the containment barrier and negative air machine into a system that can be wheeled through a corridor and then set up at the worksite, are available. These devices can have flexible or rigid walls. Some are clear to allow observation of the work occurring inside. Others are opaque. Workers who will use these portable containment units should be trained in their proper setup and use. Depending on where they are stored and the type of work performed, these units may require cleaning before transport through the facility to the job site. When selecting a portable containment unit, the IP should ensure that it is adequately sized to contain the workers and tools required to complete the task. A vacuum inside the portable containment may be used to remove accumulated dust from the workers and tools before they leave the containment area. Dust control. Workers should clean loose dust from their clothes and tools with a HEPA-filtered vacuum before leaving the contained workspace. Shoe covers that are put on before leaving the contained work zone will control dust. Place tacky mats at the exits of the contained workspace and promptly remove when soiled. Wet mats are another technique used to remove dust from the bottoms of shoes. When used in combination with tacky mats, use an additional dry mat after the wet mat. Consider cleaning and drying wet mats every 2 to 3 days to control mold growth in the mats themselves. Whenever possible, establish a dedicated traffic route away from resident areas for workers, supplies, and debris. A trash chute is the preferred method for removing debris from contained work zones on upper floors so that it does not need to be transported through the facility. Design the trash chute to close when not in use so that it does not interfere with efforts to maintain negative pressure. When a chute is not possible, debris may be removed using carts. Carts must be covered tightly and their exteriors cleaned before leaving the containment area. Transport through the healthcare facility should occur during the lowest activity period, using a route agreed upon as part of the traffic flow planning stage of the ICRA process. Key point, it is important to control airborne dust from construction and thereby also airborne mold spore levels inside the construction containment area. Higher levels of airborne contamination tend to increase the amount of dust that leaves the containment site when doors are open and workers leave the site. HEPA filters used on containment exhaust are very efficient, but they are not 100% effective. The higher the dust levels are in the containment area, the more dust passes with the exhausted air through the filter and out of the construction containment area. Prevent debris from accumulating on the floor and control dust levels with good housekeeping practices, such as the use of HEPA-filtered vacuums. A HEPA-filtered vacuum should have a filter certified to capture 0.3 micron particles at a minimum efficiency of 99.97%. There should be gasket seals on the filter to ensure that air cannot bypass the filter. Considerations for outdoor projects. Construction work outside the healthcare facility can generate increased airborne contaminants, which may be drawn into the facility through mechanical ventilation, fresh air intakes, open doors and windows, and occupant traffic. Consider the location of building air intakes, occupant walkways, and windows and doors relative to nearby demolition or excavation projects as a part of the ICRA. It may be prudent to temporarily relocate pedestrian walkways or increase the level of filtration for ventilation fresh air intakes. Adding filtration to the intakes and filter loading due to higher than typical airborne dust levels can restrict airflow and negatively affect the operation of the ventilation system. For a short duration project, it may be possible to close the ventilation system's outside air intakes near the project. Water sprays can control airborne dust emissions from demolition or excavation. Water used for dust control should be potable to minimize the potential for aerosolizing possible pathogens or endotoxins from microbial contaminants in non-potable water. Monitoring the effectiveness of mitigation efforts. Laser particle counters are recommended for monitoring the effectiveness of the construction containment. A significant increase in airborne particle counts near the construction containment, relative to the surrounding background levels, may indicate a breach or leak. There are no established safe or unsafe particle levels to use for comparison, and the level of particles in the air will vary with the amount of activity in the area. But using the counter as a sniffer can guide the user to possible sources of elevated particle counts. Particle counters are also useful to verify whether HEPA filters and vacuums and negative air machines are working properly. Many particle counters will operate in an automatic mode, periodically taking and logging samples. This makes for an effective method to monitor the effectiveness of the containment controls over extended periods. Key point, the CDC does not recommend sampling for airborne microbial contaminants before, during, or after construction projects. However, it does recommend active surveillance to monitor for airborne infections in immunocompromised residents, as well as a periodic review of laboratory results and postmortem data to identify additional cases of airborne infection that are possibly related to construction activities. When air sampling for microbial levels is necessary, the sampling campaign must be well designed by an experienced individual so that it addresses the complexities inherent in conducting and interpreting the results. Risk mitigation during maintenance. Maintenance and engineering department responsibilities may vary widely based on facility size, type, and capabilities. However, the following list provides typical responsibilities of the department with regard to normal maintenance responsibilities. Equipment repair and maintenance varies broadly but would typically include resident beds, tables, and other furniture, wheelchairs, and scales, sterilizers, and other laboratory equipment. System maintenance and repair may include pneumatic tube, nurse call and code blue, duress, access control, and fire alarm systems, as well as elevators and other lifts. HVAC systems are critical to a safe environment. These include air supply, return, and exhaust systems, as well as heating, cooling, and humidification and filtration systems. Utility systems management includes, in addition to the HVAC equipment noted above, the following: electrical system and emergency power systems. Medical gas systems, including oxygen, medical air, nitrogen, and medical vacuum, as well as piped anesthesia gases. Potable water and wastewater systems. Boiler, steam, and hot water systems. Pager and communication systems. Facility infrastructure maintenance and repair includes elements such as roofing, window systems, flooring, ceiling and walls, and doors and hardware. grounds and landscaping. Building renovations and alterations typically include planning, design, and construction activities, though the responsibility for this work varies greatly. The IP must understand the processes that frame this work so they can provide the appropriate input. Emergency preparedness programs are typically collaborative efforts, but the maintenance and engineering, MEI, management and staff will play a leading role as the systems noted above are important to such programs. Key point. Many of the IPC considerations with regard to maintenance activities are the same as those for construction and providing a safe care environment. It is important that maintenance and engineering personnel be aware of the risks that may be encountered when maintaining the various systems for which they are responsible. They should also wear appropriate PPE and conform with all applicable standard and transmission-based precautions.